Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, the RTE Rugby Podcast. I'm Michael Corcoran. Later on, we'll hear from the Ireland head coach Joe Schmidt and New Zealand vice-captain Ben Smith ahead of Saturday's test game at the Aviva Stadium. Ireland Rugby World Cup 2023 bid ambassador Brian O'Driscoll joins also. So too does the New Zealand broadcaster Tony Johnson and former Irish international Reggie Corrigan. First, let's relive the highlights from last Saturday's Ireland victory against Canada at the Aviva Stadium.
And again, he's gone towards Billy Holland there, who got us that one. Billy Holland, the 1,082nd person to wear the green of Ireland. As Ireland now are down low, trying to shunt Canada back now. They have control of it here now. Canada disrupting. Ireland in possession, back with Marmion on a sniping run. On the near side of the pitch, it's Keith Arrows who's got the try. 5.5 minutes gone. The Aviva Stadium has erupted. Earls with the try. He scored after 2 minutes in Thomond Park. I suppose it's the Dublin air. Another 3.5. 5 minutes, 30 seconds gone. Earls for the try. Ireland in the lead, 5 points.
Absolutely. Took an extra 3 minutes to do it. Superb snipe by Marmion heading down the blind.
And the referee playing advantage shot of Paddy Jackson. Paddy Jackson out towards Keith Earls. Dances around two of them. Moves it across. Far side of the pitch as they go charging for the line. Across on the far side. And that's a wondrous try. And that's the far side of the pitch by Luke Marshall. Good interplay between three of the Irish players. 21 and a half minutes gone. The referee was playing advantage there, but there was Luke Marshall, who did exactly what was required of him. And Ireland have got their second try. Earls managed to take two Irish fellows out of his well. Such was his intent. Back at Gary Ringrose, moves it back, and there's a chance here now. That's Tiernan O'Hanlon. Over the 10-meter line. Inside the 22. Tiernan O'Hanlon for the line. Tiernan O'Hanlon for the try. 2.5 minutes remaining. First half of the match. There was a man from Connemara who went charging through the Canadian defence, and he's lit up the Aviva Stadium. Tiernan O'Halloran rescues the first half from an Irish point of view with a try, 37 and a half minutes gone.
And here comes Kieran Marmion with the scrum feed, 5 metres short of the line. 3.5 minutes gone, second half. Ordered by 21 points to 14. And Marmion now with the scrum feed. And Ireland driving Canada back there. The scrum has gone down on this near side. And as Canada were under pressure, as Ireland, I thought that Finlay Beelan was under a bit of pressure there. But the touch judge didn't spot it.
No, Justice Sears Duru, his bind snapped and he slipped right down to ground. So it was actually Finlay was doing okay there. He stepped in a little bit, no doubt about it. But the Canadians, it was his bind slipped first.
Well, here comes the second attempt at a scrum, 4 minutes gone, second half. It looks as if Greg Feek has had a word with the scrummaging unit in terms of what they need to do in the second half of this game. And Kieran Marmion now with the scrum feed for Ireland. And again, Canada under pressure here now as the ball is at the feet of Jack O'Donoghue. O'Donoghue has control of it. Referee has blown the whistle and he's given a penalty try. And the Canadians collapse. Under the pressure there, and they are literally, I would say, six or seven of them in a heap, as Ireland have absolutely smashed them back. The referee taking no nonsense whatsoever, and he's got in. It's a try for Ireland under the post, penalty try.
Available for Marmion towards Kilcoyne. Kilcoyne has it now. Kilcoyne stopped about a yard short of the line. He's desperately keen to make an impact here. Back at Marmion. Marmion now with Ireland all on the one side. As Ireland charged forward with that, stopped about a yard towards Alton Delan. Alton Delan burst through the tackle. Alton Delan with his first international try for Ireland. 59 minutes gone. The strength of the man. He battled his way over the Canadian border and has scored a try for Ireland.
That is exactly the response that Ireland needed. Exactly what we wanted. Backed in there just to show that it's not going to happen again. What happened in the first half, there was no way 14 points were going to be conceded.
Kieran Marmion there having a chat with Paddy Jackson. Craig Gilroy is the sole Irish representative on the wing here, but there are two Canadians marking him. So Ireland have numbers on that far side. Keith Earls completely unmarked on the edge of the 22. He's now walked all the way inside the 22 far side. Jack O'Donoghue has it. Is Ireland trying to drive Canada forward here? And look,
tucked in. It's Kieran Marmion who's touched it down there at the feet of Jack O'Donoghue. The referee, I think, was about to award a penalty try. But that was good work by the Irish forwards and patient, clever work by Kieran Marmion.
Absolutely. Marmion absolutely gifted with that try. It was at the feet of the Canadians, but I think you're right. They were going to give the penalty away anyway. He might have walked underneath the posts again.
And he still maintained possession. Tiernan O'Halloran had it initially, swept back towards Peter O'Mahony. Peter O'Mahony goes forward now. The referee was playing advantage. Back with Luke McGrath to Joey Carberry. Inside, there's a chance here now. The ball swept inside. Here comes Kilcoyne. Tipped by a Canadian as he was going for the line. Available for Luke McGrath towards James Tracy. James Tracy smacks him in the back. James Tracy is there. Does James Tracy touch it down? James Tracy, the referee, gives a sympathetic blast of the whistle. James Tracy just about cut over the line. Kilcoyne almost got there, but James Tracy certainly did.
I tell you, Dave Kilcoyne will be absolutely raging. Three barnstorming runs in that phase of play from him. Absolutely superb play. James Tracy gets the last couple of metres that was needed there. He had a bit of work to do, but managed to scramble over just.
Well, during the course of this week, Irish Rugby finally launched their bid to host Rugby World Cup 2023. France and South Africa are the other two countries in the running. A final decision on who hosts the tournament will be made in November 2017. Shortly, we'll hear from the bid ambassador, Brian O'Driscoll, but first, the committee chairman, Dick Spring.
We've put together a very professional team. We're very determined that we want to win this bid. There's going to be very serious competition from France and South Africa, so it behoves us to make sure that our bid is really a Rolls-Royce bid, absolutely professional and supported by the people of the island.
If we're to be objective and kind of stand back, we look what Ireland has, we look at maybe what France has or South Africa. Everybody brings something strong to the table, so what's going to be unique about Ireland?
Absolutely, and you know, we're up against two countries that have already hosted successful World Cups, so they'll be using that to their advantage. But I believe that we have a unique product to offer here in Ireland. We have a great supporter base, we have the infrastructure right throughout the country, and I think we will actually be offering a unique World Cup that will involve all the people on the island. Rugby and other sporting supporters, and we've shown even as late as Chicago you can get 62,300 people to see Ireland play the All Blacks. I don't think any other country in the world could have got those numbers to Chicago, and that I think would be very helpful to our bid. The timing is very good. Likewise, during the World Cup last year, the Ireland supporters came out in big numbers, so we can I believe we can offer the rugby world a successful financial competition, which they need, and secondly, it'll be good for the game and spreading the game, and that's what they want.
And in terms of the size of the island of Ireland, yes, it's a small island, but the fact that you can get around it so quickly with the infrastructure that's there, even by road, certainly has to be a huge advantage.
I would certainly, that would be a very strong part of our bid, because it's a very compact island. You won't be going for an hour on a train outside a city to go to a stadia like a lot of other countries. You'll be walking to most of our stadia, and they're very accessible, and we will put together a transport plan which will make sure that all the stadia are accessible and that the supporters will have maximum comfort in getting to and from stadia.
It's important that everybody's on side, even in terms from a financial point of view, because I know that it's quite an expensive undertaking to bid, and B, the fact that you've got to give a pretty substantial guarantee to World Rugby.
Yes, the sums are quite significant, and I have to say we're extremely grateful to the governments of both the North and the South. They've both come up and are very supportive of the bid, and the Irish government has given the guarantee which is required, and we would be hopeful that, and indeed we would be confident that this will be a successful financial operation for Ireland, North and South, and that in fact there will be very strong revenues from it.
Given the fact that there are stadia within the country, albeit quite a lot of them associated with another code, in this case the GEA, I mean, you certainly have to be more than grateful to the Gaelic Athletic Association for the part that they play.
More than grateful, indeed, and from the moment that this was suggested, the GEA came on board. And the reality is, without the availability of the third largest stadium in Europe, which Croke Park is, we wouldn't even be able to consider putting in a bid. But the GAA have been very supportive. They have great facilities around the country. Two new stadia in the pipeline, Páirc Uí and Caseman Park. And with those component parts, we will have a very, very strong stadia infrastructure bid.
So, I mean, after the launch today, where do you go from here, given the fact that we're all in this country probably singing from the same hymn sheet? You don't need to explain it to us, because
sure,
we know how great this place can be.
Well, the next number of months will be our interaction with the Rugby World Board. The council putting the bid together, there's a huge questionnaire. I mean, the detail required and the interchange of information between ourselves and the board will be phenomenal. There'll be a lot of work to be done over the next few months, culminating during a period. There'll be site visits here from the Rugby World Board in March, and then there'll be exchange of views over the next few months, with a major decision to be made in November. We'll be making a formal presentation in London in September, and then the announcement will be made in November. But we've got to just stay at the wheel. This is going to be very competitive. We've got to put the best foot forward and to make sure that our bid is absolutely Rolls-Royce quality.
And in terms of voting, I mean, that's a huge thing, isn't it? It's important that you stay on side, perhaps is the wrong word, but, you know, that you stay pretty cosy with everybody who has a vote.
Absolutely. At the end of the day, it'll come down to votes, and you've got to get enough votes to get across the line. And we are obviously communicating with all of the countries that have votes, and obviously at this early stage, nobody will commit themselves. But we've got to stay in communication with them. They've got to understand the quality of our bid quality of the competition that we can actually run this country. So that will be happening on a constant basis over the next number of months. Obviously, we have visiting teams here at the present time. We also have the home internationals. So all through that process, we will be talking to those who have the votes and who will be casting them in November of next year.
Just as a country, from a country, Ireland country point of view, what would hosting Rugby World Cup actually mean to a country like this?
I think it would be the most phenomenal experience of our lifetime. I can't think of anything to compare with it. I think it would be great for Ireland in terms of the showcase for this country. I think we're guaranteed we will have more travelling visitors to a World Cup than any other country has ever had before. Highlight Ireland. We have a very good tourism product as it is in terms of the numbers we get to this island. And I just think it would be the culmination of a great sporting nation and what's gone into sport in Ireland over the last 100 years.
And just before we finish up, I mean, you mentioned about Chicago. There's no doubt whatsoever that, you know, what happened there and the fact that so many people came out to see Ireland, there was so much green there on the day, that can't help but be a boost to what's coming down the track.
I would say that's a major plus for us in terms of showing the others what we can produce. And that plus our attendance at the World Cup last year in the UK, plus the Irish support base for the soccer. The Irish will travel, and the Irish are good travellers, and they're very good sports fans, and I think that will help our bid as well.
That's Dick Spring there. Well, the former Irish international and recent Hall of Fame inductee, Brian O'Driscoll, is the bid ambassador.
I think a huge amount of work has gone in from a logistical point of view to get to this point, to be an accepted bid nomination, along with France and South Africa, two nations that have hosted World Cups before. So I don't know whether that's a strength or a weakness of ours. Breaking new ground, you'd be hopeful would be on World Rugby's radar. Our close proximity to London and the market there as well has to be a bonus. The fact that our national team is doing okay as well can't be doing us any harm.
The fact that Irish people love a cause and get behind a team and an occasion, we've seen that, you know, whether it's Gaelic games or rugby or soccer, anywhere Ireland plays, people turn up.
Yeah, they do. I think realistically as well, you know, we're not going to hold a Soccer World Cup. We're not going to hold an Olympics. This is the biggest tournament we're capable of holding in the world. And you see, I've seen over the course of the last year, the cohesion between the North and South government in wanting to make this happen. I think rugby unites the country. We've seen that for a number of years. And, you know, the excitement being generated on both sides is palpable. Because we are absolutely capable of doing this and capable of doing a phenomenal job, not just capable of delivering something that might be accepted, capable of delivering something where people would be sent away with fantastic memories of an incredible welcome and a country embracing a tournament like maybe they haven't seen before.
Now, we've both travelled to the other two competitors, if I can call it that, France and South Africa before. What's unique about Ireland? What's unique about an Irish Rugby World Cup?
One of the real strong points in Ireland, full stop, irrespective of sport in Ireland, is the warm welcome that people get from the second they step off their plane to the moment they get on it to go home. You know, Cade Milia Fáilte is a phrase for a reason. It's because, you know, both North and South, the welcome is phenomenal. And in seeing how sport has unified the country, particularly via rugby, speaks volumes for where we are in hosting a massive tournament like this and how well it would be received throughout the 5.5 or 6 million people on both sides of that border.
I know that from talking to other people who are involved in the game of rugby throughout the world. I mean, this is a place that everybody enjoys to come. I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to be great crack all the time in terms of a 6 week thing, but the welcome, as you say, that's afforded to visitors in this country is rather unique.
It is, yeah, and I see it with teams that I've played against, and even at World Rugby Awards on Sunday night, the talk of, you know, an All Black team that are somewhat licking their wounds are still looking forward to coming to Dublin because they know it'll be a relatively hostile environment, but a very friendly environment when they aren't playing the game. And I think that's what foreigners look forward to. I talked to George Gregan about his love of Ireland and how they always embrace the challenge of coming and playing a tough test match, but more so coming and enjoying what Ireland has to offer, which is plentifold. And I just think that we'll never be more ready to host a tournament like this. This is not about having a go now to host it in 15 or 20 years' time. We're ready now, so I hope World Rugby give us our opportunity.
And there's no doubt whatsoever that the events in Chicago a couple of weeks ago shows that Ireland is ready for the world.
Yeah, we're absolutely ready for the world. We've gone and beaten the world champions, two-time world champions, after the team that was seen as unbeatable after an 18 or 19 game run. And we're not losing sight of the fact that we haven't beaten them for 111 years. And the expectation of the country has gone that we're going to beat them again. It's going to be even tougher this time out. But that is definitely positioning us well in keeping us in the forefront of world rugby's minds, that we're a big player now on the international level. And there's no reason that won't continue in years to come when it does get to hosting a tournament in 2023.
Before we finish up, I know I'll be on the level above my head here shouting and roaring on Saturday. Will you be here? Like, what sort of a spectator are you going to be?
I was over in Chicago and went over my first ever capacity to watch a game, not working or not playing or not injured since I was a teenager, and it was really, really exceptional. And as much as I love rugby, I love holidays as well. So myself and my missus are going away on Saturday morning, so I won't get to see the game live, but I'll be following it as soon as I get off the plane on social media or any footage that I can manage to see. And do you know what? We've got a great chance again. We really do. I think the expectation to win might be people getting ahead of themselves, but we won't be far away, you know, on the final whistle. If we can stay early with them and start well, that's key against the All Blacks. As soon as they get into their rhythm, they're very, very difficult to start. But they are licking their wounds, and speaking to a couple of them, they're ready to come over here and put things right.
Well, that's the Ireland 2023 BID Ambassador Brian O'Driscoll there speaking during the course of this week. I'm joined on the podcast today by the New Zealand broadcaster Tony Johnson and former Irish international Reggie Corrigan. I guess because you've travelled the furthest, we'll talk to you first, Tony. A Rugby World Cup in Ireland, fingers crossed, 2023. Does that excite you? Or is it something that, you know, lets you take an objective view? How do you see this thing?
No, I'm all for it, and for a couple of reasons. Firstly, because if I don't get behind it, then Liam Neeson will hunt me down and he will kill me. But seriously, I see some similarities here with the bid that New Zealand made for 2011, which a lot of people said was not worth the trouble. And of course, they won that bid. Firstly, very importantly, you've got government back. In fact, you've got the backing of two parliaments, haven't you? They've underwritten the tournament. They'll provide the infrastructure. That's really important. I think from here on in, Ireland just has to box smart and appeal to the people who are going to be making the vote rather than appeal to the masses, which is what other countries make the mistake of doing. I think if they box smart, I think it'll be a fantastic fan experience with the GAA stadiums at your disposal. I can't see why it wouldn't be a brilliant success. And I know that Ireland supported New Zealand's bid to hold the tournament in 2011, so I very much hope that New Zealand will support Ireland's bid.
Reggie?
I'd have to agree completely with Tony. I think it just goes to show you how far Ireland has come in recent years. I remember distinctly when rugby turned professional and the thoughts 20 years ago of Ireland even being with a chance of holding a Rugby World Cup were just, you know, you were off your head if you thought that way. But I think the fact that we've progressed so far in this country, that the GAA have opened their doors and welcomed rugby, the foreign game, into their great stadiums is really what can get this bid across the line. And, you know, when you look down along, I looked at the list of stadiums yesterday as they were listed, And, you know, it was pretty impressive stuff. I mean, there was big attendance availability. There was up to 40,000 people in some of the GA stadiums, the lesser well-known ones around the country. And then you add in the ones that are there for the rugby as well. It just means that we can really host this competition and really do it well. And I think everybody in the world has a fondness for Ireland, let's put it that way. Tourism in recent years has gone through the roof. They're coming from all over the world to visit this place and to have an excuse, as most people need now and again, to get away and come to an event like the World Cup in Ireland is an amazing thing. And I'm all for it. I really hope we get it. And I'm very confident that we will, actually.
Tony, I've mentioned, you know, in the introduction of this, that Brian O'Driscoll was the bid ambassador. But if you like, it's the Irish people who've left this country over the years who are the people who are going to help us get this and land this bid, if you like. I mean, you know, you've been to Rugby World Cups in your own country. You've seen what's happened during the course of British and Irish Lions tours and the support that there is from all of the Irish people who've been forced to emigrate over the years.
Well, that's another thing too, is that the Irish have brought such a wonderful flavour and vibrancy to the other tournaments. It's time they were rewarded for that too. Fantastic supporters of their team, but they just bring such a great vibe wherever they go. And I can remember as they sort of cut a swathe through some of the provincial towns of New Zealand during the last World Cup. But, you know, it's time, I think, for payback. I think it's time for Ireland to be rewarded for the wonderful way they've supported the game in other parts of the world. And look, it's going to be very interesting to see. South Africa will play the sympathy card to a degree. They'll say, we need this to unite the country again like it did in 1995. But I'm afraid their political situation is such a mess at the moment. It really is hard to see them getting a good bid together. France, it's still in the rear vision mirror. So to me, as long as you can accommodate the people, and we proved in New Zealand, and country of 4 million people, stadium of 4 million people, we called it, we were able to accommodate them despite the sceptics and saying that we wouldn't be able to. We did. IRB love the money, of course, but now that you've got these great stadia available to you, I'm sure it can generate the money.
I know that during the course of a presentation, Reg, that they made to World Rugby, one of the questions asked was, well, what's your plan for getting the fans from the centre of the city to the stadium? And the answer was, well, by foot. Because, I mean, that's how close
everything,
you know,
is
the proposed
in proximity.
Places are. I mean, and the fact, and Tony has even said it, you know, the fact that it's actually so easy to get around this country. I mean, you could be training in Galway today and playing a match in Dublin tomorrow. It's that close.
Yeah, I mean, your trip to Limerick is less than 2 hours now. I got to Galway last week in 2 hours. I get to Cork in 2.5 hours. Belfast is an hour and a half up the road. You know, anywhere else in the world. I mean, you look at countries like Japan and you know, nations like that, and when they're talking about trying to provide infrastructure and everything else, traffic jams and all the issues that they have are so much more of a problem, and they find ways around it. Same thing happened in New Zealand, happens in Australia, it happened in South Africa at the time when they were trying to have that World Cup initially. The infrastructure wasn't there back in 95, but they built it and they developed it. And we've got from November 2017, you've got a good 6 years to make sure that the extra things that are needed to be put in place are put in place. And there can be traffic restrictions around game day. Look, infrastructure is not going to be the thing that holds this back. We can more than handle that.
Given the fact that Ireland has never hosted this, you know, before, and probably given the fact that Ireland is highly unlikely to host an Olympic Games or a Soccer World Cup, I mean, this could be the biggest thing that's ever going to hit this country.
Yeah, one other thing I'll say too is that we thought our days of hosting World Cups were over. We thought it had got too big.
Yeah.
And that we couldn't generate the money and you know, that we'd had our one tournament and maybe the best we could hope for is to get on the coattails of Australia. And when we tried that, it was just an absolute disaster. And we ended up missing out altogether. But it worked. And I think what Reggie's saying is absolutely that the infrastructure is just so important. And look, in New Zealand, that the fans walked. The fan walk became one of the great things. And you can go to the smaller regions like we did with Nelson, places like that, put up a few games there in smaller stadium, and it becomes a great event for the teams. Like, we, you know, playing the USA against Italy and Nelson was a huge success. And so it's just all about boxing smart. And I'm sure that you've got the people that can do that.
And given the fact that Ireland, you know, the other two rivals, if I can call them that, have held this event before.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even a card that Ireland can say, this is going to be unique. This is going to be something we're going to do with the Irish way.
Absolutely. And I think that is a big factor, the fact that they have both had it before. And, you know, as Tony said, South Africa might play the sympathy card, but they will get other opportunities. You know, there's no question about that. France will certainly get other opportunities in the future. This may be Ireland's one chance. And, you know, let's be honest about it. If Ireland get it in 2023, they're not likely to get it again for a long time after that. That's not to say that we won't do a good job of it, but it's got to spread itself out around the world. And the bigger rugby nations will come higher on the list.
You want to go somewhere new. I think that's really important. And I also think it's really important too to make it Ireland's World Cup. Don't go offering a few games to the Scots or the Welsh like that. Have it here.
We want it here.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Well,
you know?
When we went to France in 27, I'm on a plane to Edinburgh.
Yeah,
I mean, which is not very French. And Cardiff. And
I was about to remind you that one.
No, don't.
Once we get you here, we're not letting you off. Yeah, don't worry.
We're not letting you out of the country once
that's
we get
it.
You
we
here.
We'll box anyway. You in then.
All right.
We'll do a Donald on it and build a wall around Ireland.
Don't remind me of Cardiff.
Yeah, okay, listen, a lot of handshaking to be done between now and next November 2017. I know the schmoozing has already begun, if I can call it that. People visiting various unions around the place and all sorts of promises about who's going to support who. But at the end of the day, as we know, and other countries know, to their cost, it's all about final votes. And it's all very well saying you have a promise of a vote, but the actual vote is what counts. And we'll find out in November next year. So fingers crossed indeed. Rugby World Cup, Ireland 2023. Gosh, what a wonderful thing that would be to say. Well, New Zealand coach Steve Hansen has made 5 changes for Saturday's test against Ireland at the Aviva Stadium. Brodie Retallick and Sam Whitelock return at lock. Anton Leonard-Brown and Malachi Fekitoa are in the centre, but Israel Dagg on the right wing. The vice-captain Ben Smith is named at fullback.
How have you seen Kieran Reid respond to this challenge? This is his first loss as captain. How have you seen him respond to what he's got to go through?
Yeah, I think, you know, early in the week, he's really driven the way forward of how we get better as a team from the last game. I think like a big thing is we've let him down with the way we probably played against Ireland last time, and we weren't happy with how that went. But I think, you know, there's a few ways that he's probably responded. One was through the review and taking the learnings. The one is probably just the way he's approached training and his attitude there is to, you know, wanting to make sure that we execute at training. That'll help going into Saturday. And then, I think from now is, you know, it's going to be not just him, but a lot of the leaders in the team are going to have to help drive the team so that come Saturday we're in good shape to take on the Irish.
What about you, Ben? Can you get grumpy if you need to? Are you a guy that can crack the whip and say, hey guys, come on, this just simply isn't good enough, we have to do better?
Yeah, well, I need to be better myself. I need to make sure that I'm leading by the way that I play and the way that I approach the game on Saturday. So that's what I need to do, is to make sure that I'm getting out there and putting my best foot forward for the team so that the team can do well. And then I think, like, if there's a solution that I can bring to the team so that we're reacting and we're seeing things as quickly as we can so that we can make good decisions in the game, then I'll make sure that that feedback's coming in. And I think, you know, there's one way to train that, and that's throughout the week making sure that we're doing that. So if I need to put my 2 cents in, I will.
Did Ireland do anything in that game in Chicago that you weren't expecting?
I think there was a few things that they probably did. I think, you know, we knew that they were going to try and execute a good kicking game, but I think the way that they did it was really smart. So we've had a bit of a look at that. And I think also just the way that they brought physicality and the way that they approached the game took us back a wee bit.
How nice to get Brody and Sam back, and I guess conversely as well, a little frustrating to lose Jerome.
Yeah, a bit gutted for JK because he'd be a bit like us. He'd want to get out there and be a part of this weekend, and he'd want to play, so sort of feel for him. But yeah, obviously it's great to get Sam and Brody back, and they're two experienced players that, as Sam said in there, that they're a part of our leadership group, and they're a big part of the way that our forwards go about their work. So looking forward to having those two back.
So does much change when you look at what the keys are to get a victory on Saturday night?
Well, I think we've just got to do things better, and that's one thing that we've looked at out of the review is ways to do things better. So hopefully we can take those learnings, but it's going to be a tough game. We know that I was involved in 2013 and remember just how that match was, and how, you know, passionate the Irish were, and you know what kind of attitude they're going to bring. So it's going to make for a great game come Saturday.
That's the New Zealand vice captain Ben Smith there. Well, the Irish coach Joe Schmidt has made just one change to his starting side from the team which began the game in Chicago. Sean O'Brien in for the injured Jordy Murphy. On the bench, Ian Henderson replaces Ulton Delan, and Paddy Jackson is named ahead of Joey Carberry. There's no place in the matchday squad for either Peter O'Mahony or Keith Earls. Let's hear the thoughts of the Ireland coach, Joe Schmidt.
Having some experienced players back available was always going to make for a complex selection process, but at the same time we had a few guys who weren't able to train fully Monday, Tuesday, and that kind of clarified things for us. We work in pretty small windows to get the preparation, and so it was a little bit like Chicago where we said, righto, well, we've got confidence in some of these younger guys. Some of the experienced guys are only coming back after long injury breaks. We'll invest in these young guys because they're fit, they're able, and we're going to have to play 80 minutes, potentially 82 minutes, because it was the 81st minute that we lost in the Aviva in 2013. So we wanted to be able to play to the end and beyond.
Sean O'Brien back. I mean, that's obviously, you know, one of your more experienced players. I mean, did you feel that you needed to get your more experienced, fit players on the pitch at the start of this game?
I think for Shawnee we did, because Geordie's obviously injured, so he came out of the calculations. And for Josh van der Vlier, he came off the bench and slotted in so well that we felt that was a very comfortable position for us to be in. We wanted Shawnee to probably get a little bit more time in the team during the week, and that makes it easier to put him in the starting 15 as opposed to coming off the bench, because you don't get quite so many reps in the team, and you know, therefore get quite as much clarity. And Sean hasn't really been with us since the World Cup. He played 20 minutes against France in the Six Nations, and apart from that has had no involvement. So for him to find his feet again, we wanted him to be as involved as possible in the preparation.
A conversation I had with you before about one of the main lessons learned from 2013 was the bench number 16 to 23 and the impact, and that is the word that they have to make when they come on. I mean, that surely will be tested this weekend.
Yeah, they have to make an impact with a real clarity of thought, a real calmness, but a real energy as well. So I know that might sound a bit paradoxical, but it is getting that balance that they come on, that their energy is really high, but they're really accurate in what they're doing. And so we felt that we got that. You know, we got that last weekend against Canada. Some of the subs who came on did a really good job, and I think we got it in Chicago as well. From the bulk of the players, the bulk of the time, there were a few slip-ups, and you know, those players are aware of them, and we'll try to work their way through them to make sure that they're as watertight as they can be.
When you look at the New Zealand team, there's no doubt whatsoever that they have strengthened in key areas with the return of some very experienced players.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously up front, the front row is the same, but the second row, I think it probably adds a bit of value to their pack as far as the scrum is concerned. Certainly, obviously, as far as the line-out is concerned, without any disrespect to Tuipulotu or Jerome Kano, who's an unbelievably good aerial player. But having those guys who play that position and have accumulated so many test matches together, they'll feed off each other and they'll energise those guys around them. So they're going to make it more difficult. And having Malachi Fikitoa starting from the start, he'll be a little bit more comfortable rather than coming on. And Anton Leonard-Brown is probably the find of the rugby championship for them. He's been absolutely outstanding. He's still a young man and did a great job during the Super Rugby season. So for him, he's going to come on and add real impact and probably out the back, as much a threat that Waisaki Naholo is, carrying the ball and putting the ball behind. I think Israel Dagg's ability in the air, his long association with Ben Smith and playing a dual fullback role, that will allow them to maybe diffuse some of the tactics we used last time. So, I think it's probably an astute selection by them and it's probably a stronger selection by them. So things are more complicated for us.
What's going to have to be different for Ireland this week?
I think there were a couple of inaccuracies from us that we can't afford to repeat. We got a little bit lucky because they dropped a couple of, uncharacteristically, made a few unforced errors. I think we did well a few times to force some errors, but in reality, we know that there was a few drop balls from them that they wouldn't normally drop. And one of them was down the left-hand side at 33-29. You're getting pretty nervous at that stage, and if that ball wasn't put down, then potentially, the result changes because they're the fine margins that you deal with.
When you look at your opposite number, Steve Hansen, this morning he said that after 111 years of history, one win for Ireland out of 29, they've won, I think, two or three Rugby World Cups, but Ireland are the favourites on Saturday.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure that he should leave his current position and try to become a bookie. I think we're still rank outsiders for the game. For in a two-horse race, we might be at about half we were in Chicago, which was 12 or 13 to 1. So you're still at massive odds. And while that's not something that distracts us, it's just something that probably people think about. And I suppose for the general public, that's of interest. But for us, our only interest is in trying to be as accurate as we can be, trying to be really clinical and prepared, because it's going to take that and more.
And before I let you finish, I mean, we've known obviously for the last fortnight this game is taking place this coming Saturday. I mean, did you feel, or do you feel, that there's a huge sense of anticipation and excitement ahead of the game?
Certainly there's a lot of messages coming in to the camp, and there's a lot of the stadium's been sold out for a long time. There's a lot of people still trying to find their way to get tickets, and all that anticipation does simmer away, and we sense it as a team. And it's a reminder of the responsibility you've got to be as well prepared as you can be, because you've got to validate the degree of support that you've got. And so we're very conscious of that and looking forward to it, but at the same time, and a little bit intimidated by what's going to be a huge occasion for us.
Well, that's the Ireland coach, Joe Schmidt, there speaking to me just after he had named the team to take on New Zealand at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday. Reggie Corrigan, still here with me. Your thoughts on that starting team? I guess for a lot of people, it was all about who's going to play Jersey 7.
Yeah, I mean, that was the big talking point all week. And it was also about what tactics we thought Joe might employ for this game. So many people would have thought that Van der Flier, being the more natural 7, having that pace across the ground, might have been able to slow things, get to the breakdown quicker, slow things down a bit more for New Zealand, and stop them, starve them of the possession, which is so crucial. It happened last week in Soldiers Field. It happened in 2013. Crucial that we starve them of possession. So Van der Flier might have just edged it in a lot of people's minds for that reason. But if you think about it logically, and you think about the physicality, and you think about comments that were made by the Kiwis themselves prior to the last game in Chicago, the surprise that they had that Sean O'Brien wasn't included in the squad. O'Brien is someone that they fear, they respect, the physicality that he brings to the game. it's probably the right move. And listen, Joe Schmidt made the call, so it is the right move. Start off with Sean O'Brien, put him out there, let him take the brunt of all the pain and hardship that's going to come in the first 50, 60 minutes. And then you can still bring on Van der Fleer with fresh legs, pace and ability later on in the game to add his input to it. The key to all of this is having impact from the bench. And whether or not O'Brien is an impact player at that level, it's more maybe a starting player for O'Brien with impact coming from Van der Fleer. That's probably the logic behind it.
Tony, I know that in the build-up to the game in Chicago that Sean O'Brien was name-checked by Jerome Kino, who said at the time that he was quite surprised that Sean O'Brien wasn't in the Ireland squad for that particular fixture. So Jerome Kino's got his wish for this weekend.
Unfortunately, he hasn't got his wish in terms of playing. He's going to miss the game himself, and I'm sure he'd love to be there, and it's a loss for New Zealand that he's not there. But O'Brien was probably the best player on the field 3 years ago when they played at the Aviva. He's a player who's got... New Zealanders still remember his performance against the Australians when us and Ireland beat Australia at Eton Park. but so obviously the massive respect for the guy, and I think just his very presence makes this a stronger team. The other thing about, and I had a bit of a chat just on the sideline after the game with Joe in Chicago, and it's about 1-23 now. I think it's an advantage that New Zealand has had over most teams in recent years, is that 1-23, the guys coming off the bench impacting on the game. I think Ireland has that now. When you there's no place in your starting 15 for Henderson, no place in the 23 for Earls and O'Mahony, that you're in pretty good shape for this, that's for sure.
When you look from the outside in and you see what we have, I mean, that's one of the things that certainly Joe, I know from conversations I've had with him in the past, that's what he's learned from 2013. Because if you look at late in the game, before Ryan Crotty gets the try, I think the three or four people before that who actually touched the ball were all replacements. They were impact replacements, and they certainly made an impact.
Yeah, and you just look at the rucks, for example, the way that the Franks brothers hit the rucks. You know, these are guys who've come off the bench. Beauden Barrett, his ability to come on and change the game. So, you know, Ireland has that now. It's a fantastic prospect, this match, I've got to say. The excitement and anticipation in New Zealand is through the roof. A lot of people, I think, are used to assuming an All Black bounce back because they don't get beaten twice in a row very often. I think the last time it happened was just before the World Cup in 2011, which hardly counted. But I think people realise here now that that's not a given against this team. The excitement and anticipation for this match is off the charts.
When you look, Reggie, at that Ireland bench, I mean, it certainly does give you I won't say a boost, but it certainly makes you feel, you know what, if you had to call on fellas like this at any stage during the course of the game, they're not really, you know, going to not be able to peak at the performance of the bloke who's actually on the pitch in the first place.
No, well, in any other team in the world, Keane Healy would be the starting loose head prop, no question about that. Cronin's got an amazing ability to come on and take ball at pace and is almost unstoppable if he gets it at the right angle. An incredibly powerful replacement. You've got Henderson who, okay, we got to be honest, his rugby is a little bit rusty, and how much he can exactly impact on the game will wait to be seen. I think Ulton Delan is a bit unfortunate, but carrying a little bit of a knock probably didn't help his chances of getting in there. But then you look at Paddy Jackson as well. I mean, for so many years we've been talking about and when I mention Jackson, let's not forget how unfortunate Joey Carberry is after the performance he put in Soldiers Field. But I think the right call has been made here, because for years we've been worried about Johnny Sexton and only having Johnny Sexton and not having the backup. And when Paddy first came into the scene, you know, he had a bit of a nightmare start in his Irish jersey, and took him a lot of years to get over that, and a lot of hard work and a lot of confidence building to get back to the level where we can now rely on someone like Paddy Jackson to come on and control the situation should anything happen to Johnny Sexton. And if we're honest about it, Johnny rarely finishes a game these days. That's just the nature of international rugby. So we will more than likely be calling on Paddy Jackson. So it's a good call to have him there because he already has that experience. So yes, an impact bench, an experienced bench, and people that we know we can trust when they do come on.
Tony, in terms of the New Zealand team, I mean, to me it was always a given that once Brodie Retallick was able to stand on 2 feet and put one in front of the other without toppling over, he was going to come back in. I mean, the question mark was about Sam Whitelock, whether he was going to come through the kind of whole fitness regime, a retesting of him during the course of this week.
They worked him hard during the week too. They put a fair load on him because those high ankle sprains, they just Steve Hansen was saying, they know if it hurts, then he's not playing. And he got through it fine. And look, you can't underestimate or overemphasize, I suppose, just how important those two guys are. They were missing in Chicago. That's not an excuse for what happened, but they certainly missed them. It was just, I think someone labelled them a bit arrogant for going in with, Luke Fitzgerald it was, who said they're a bit arrogant going in with Kano. Well, I know why they did that, because they were down to with those two and Romano out. They had to play Tui Pulotu, who only has a handful of matches. They didn't want to throw Scott Barrett in against a good team because it potentially damaging, although when he came on, he looked to the manner born. So they went in with Kano, and it really blunted the New Zealand game. It blunted the impact of Kano. And, of course, they were without their line-out forwards. I think that will make a big difference. Yeah. Whitelock also, fantastic work rate around the field. He's a tremendous tackler. So that's going to make a big difference to this New Zealand side, offset by the loss of Kano. Squire's a great runner with the ball, but he doesn't have that granite-like presence on the field that Kano has. I put it this way, they'll be paying attention. That they might have been caught just a little bit off guard in Chicago. It's not going to happen this week.
I think, Tony, what you said there, I mean, and I know it's not any New Zealander looking for excuses, but it is hugely important. The engine room in any pack of forwards is so vital, and Retallick and Whitlock back this week is enormous for New Zealand. I never forget the look on Reid's face for those first couple of lineouts when we were looking at the game over in Soldiers Field. You got 6'10" Devin Toner standing in the middle of the lineout, and you know they had no choice but to throw the ball to the back of the lineout. That was their only option, which is a high percentage risk ball anyway. So when you negate first phase ball like the lineout as easily as it seemed to happen in Chicago, and take away that aspect of quick deliverable ball that Smith could have given out to that back line at pace, it's a huge chunk of the All Black attacking force taken away. This week, that's not the case. And as a result of that, it'll put a different slant on the game. There's no question about it. It's hugely crucial.
I think they realise, though, they've got a job on their hands breaking down this Ireland defence. Ireland were fantastic the way they shut down the offload option, which is so important to New Zealand's game. Now, one of the reasons for that was they didn't have the front foot. They call it front loading. I don't know what that means, but that's what they call it. And it enables them to get the ball away and the tackle, maintain momentum, and they didn't get that.
Well, you see, that's what you're right there, Tony, in saying that breaking down Ireland's defence is difficult. But you see, the more goals you have at breaking down the defence, the more likely you are to break down the defence. So if you take away, let's say it's 25% of your first phase ball straight off the top of a lineout going to the backs who are asking questions of the defence, you take that away because they can't win the lineout ball, well, then it's less times that the Irish defence have to defend. It means they're getting less fatigued, they're less tired. When you're not as tired as you are, it's not as likely there's going to be holes opening up in that defence. So it's all about, it's literally about being consistently battering on the door, knocking on the door, and eventually you're going to, some hinge is going to give. And when you have that first phase possession of line out, that can happen more.
Tony, I know that in reading various articles in the last while and thinking on the way back from Chicago on the plane, I was saying to myself, gee, you know what, there's going to be no Ryan Crotty, there's no George Moala. That could be an advantage to Ireland. And then I was leafing through the media guide to see who else was on tour. And then I saw who else was on tour. with Anton and Malachi. I mean, they're different, but they will present a far different threat.
Crotty's a big loss. I mean, he was the guy that scored three years ago.
Thanks.
Just in case.
If you insist on talking about that, I'm going to insist on talking about Cardiff. Yeah. Yeah. Go on.
Crotty's one of those unspectacular players. People might remember Warwick Taylor, just sort of the glue in the back line. Good decision maker. And so they lose a fair bit there. But Leonard Brown's a remarkable young player. Fekitoa, I think the jury is still out. Very powerful, got a lot of raw power, some good skills, but hasn't quite found his feet in Test rugby. So this is a big occasion. But Leonard Brown has a remarkable ability to put a defence off balance with a change of direction before he even receives the ball and is offloading. Sonny Bill Williams, I suppose, wrote the book on it, but this guy, his ability to offload accurately in traffic is incredible. So he's a very talented player. They felt he'd been a little bit overworked, and so they didn't give him the game in Chicago. And, of course, Israel Dagg comes back as well. and he's in really good form for a guy whose career 12 months ago
fantastic
was
player.
Almost washed up. His presence is huge, but no question, I think Crotty's a loss.
In terms of the game itself, okay, I'm not going to sit here and say where's it going to be won and lost, but I mean, realistically, can we see Ireland scoring 5 tries and can we see New Zealand scoring 4?
Well, we can certainly. I think it's going to be tries, no question about it. I don't think there's any reason why Joe Schmidt. Ireland had a reputation in the past of kicking too much and all this type of stuff. But if you think back to 2013, they didn't. In fact, they moved the ball and they caught the All Blacks on the hop that day. And, you know, they were surprised. The Kiwis were surprised that we moved the ball as much as we did and passed the ball as much as we did. And, you know, like I said, we were beating them that day. And had we had a bench, we probably would have won the game. The same thing happened over in Chicago. We moved the ball. We didn't try and kick it too much. We weren't, you know, overly playing the ball into territory. We were moving the ball. We were asking questions. So there will be tries in this game. There's no question about it. I think the key to the game on Saturday is just how well each team negates each other at the breakdown area. How that's interpreted by the referee is also a big factor because, you know, we got to face the facts. It's interpreted differently in Northern Hemisphere to Southern Hemisphere. It's a lot more open and free-flowing in the Southern Hemisphere than it is here. And we're much better at actually slowing the ball down at breakdown time. So that breakdown area is going to be crucial to how the game unfolds because Smith had a tough day at the office in Chicago. Leaving aside anything else that might have been going on in his head, he didn't have the ball on the plate like he usually gets when he's with the All Blacks. It's normally presented beautifully and he's all the time in the world and there's nobody bothering him or annoying him. You're going to have Sean O'Brien sniffing at every opportunity to try and get in there and stick a boot in, and Heaslip's going to be doing the same thing, you know, and that's what the Irish game is going to be about. The counter-rooking is what they're going to build their game on for Saturday, and they have to, because we've got to stop quick ball for the Kiwis. On the other hand, if we can't stop that, these guys will have the opportunity to run all day.
Tony?
Well, I think this is where we find out how good this All Black team is, which is might be a strange thing to say, just coming off a record run of 18 test victories. But at the beginning of the year, they lost 700 caps worth of experience. Yeah. Some of the greatest players that have ever worn that black jersey. And without them, they still managed to pretty much cut a swathe through the rugby championship. Very few bumps along the way, and suddenly they've had one. And this has forced them to think about things. It forced them to go places where they haven't really been this year, just in terms of their setup. You know, one or two question marks, little areas of the game that I thought Joe's tactical approach to that test was fantastic. Mm. Not only, you mentioned, they didn't kick much, but when they kicked brilliantly.
Yeah.
But they probed around the fringes, found holes there. So this is where we find out, actually, how good this All Black team is.
The other thing, Tony, and I think you're 100% right about how good this All Black team is, what we saw in Chicago was, you know, in the games, and let's say the 18 games prior to that, we probably saw teams who were somewhat intimidated by what the All Blacks...
Beaten before they went on the field.
There was loads of examples of that.
Yeah.
But from the kickoff in this Irish game, that wasn't the case. It was as if the Irish lads just went out there, you know, to hell with this. We're sick and tired of just backing down and being intimidated. We're just going for it. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, so what? We were going to get beaten anyway. That seemed to be the attitude. And it kind of shocked the All Blacks a little bit, I felt.
Absolutely. And the other thing too is that it looked like they were going to roll over the top of them, because that's what they've been doing. They've been getting themselves into all sorts of holes the last 5 or 6 years and getting themselves out of them. And this time, there was no way out when Henshaw scored that try. Yeah. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. And when I say this is where we find out how good they are, I mean that as a question. I don't mean that as a statement. We're going to see how great they are. Yeah. I'm saying this is where we find out.
Because they're also in a situation when New Zealand last day out came back to within 4 points, 33-29. I would say 61 of the 61,500 people in the stadium thought, oh no, here we go again.
Yeah.
You know, New Zealand are going to
score
two more.
And in the past, every Irish team had thought the same thing.
Yeah.
And most teams that they come up against think the same thing. Yeah. But what we saw was Joe Carberry come in, angle a kick. Maybe it's the fear of not, or the lack of fear, because he hasn't been there and he doesn't know what it feels like to feel that pain. First cap, Wunder comes on, aims a kick to the corner that was just beautifully judged. Then the follow-up chase, Murray, when he rattled them down for the dead ball touchdown.
Savio,
that scrum.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Murray's follow-up at that stage of the game, he had no right in the world to be there. He should have been out on his feet, but it was an amazing tackle. And it was, again, that just... And I think they were drawing on the experience of 2013, definitely drawing on that experience and saying, we've been here before, we're not going down this road again.
Whereas our guys were making mistakes that they don't normally make, exactly, that they weren't making in 2013. Charlie Farmuino's got great hands, dropped a ball when they had the momentum going. Savi, I remember, he made a little decision. Yeah. He went the wrong way.
That's right.
Little things like that normally have in the past worked for this team. When you've got guys like McCaw on the field who just stops and says, right, breathe. Yeah. Just have a think about things for a moment. Yeah. And so that's the beauty of it. How much have the All Blacks learned from that experience? I can't remember how a test match like non-World Cup match being anticipated quite like this in a long time. It's brilliant.
I had a couple of friends over from Spain, you know, they wouldn't know rugby too well, and they were asking me, what competition is this? I was saying, well, it's a friendly.
You'd call it a friendly football.
You'd call it a friendly, but I said you could not get a more serious game in the world than this, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, as somebody said to me during the course of the week, I mean, winning in Chicago is great, but Ireland have never beaten the All Blacks in Ireland. So, I mean, that's the kind of, not that they need motivation. But, however, I read some of the comments of Steve Hansen, and I know he's got a quirky kind of sense of humour, right? But he has decided that after 111 years of trying, 20-odd different goes, Ireland have won one. New Zealand have won two or three Rugby World Cups. They've steamrolled through the Rugby Championship, but Ireland are the favourites for some reason on Saturday.
That might have sort of, you know, rankled a little bit, but... you know, they've got to come up with a response.
You looking forward to it, Reggie?
I can't wait. Haven't looked forward to a game as much in a long time. I looked forward to the one in Chicago, I really did, but I was always in the back of my mind worried that we were going to get a thumping. So it's hard to look forward to something that you think is going to be a negative. This one on Saturday, I can't call it. You know, the logical part of my brain is telling me the All Blacks have got to come back. They've got to be a different team. They've got to, like, I've played in New Zealand. I spent a season in New Zealand. I've toured New Zealand with Ireland. I know how passionate they are about their sport, and I know that it will not go down well. They'll give us one, you know. They'll say, look, fair play, it's the Irish, we don't mind them too much, and, you know, they're good guys, and if anyone's going to beat us, glad it's them and not England. But that's as far as it goes. They're not going to do that twice, and if these boys don't get a performance on Saturday and beat us, the New Zealand media are going to go to town on them, and that's some pressure. Now, that being said, that is pressure that they're not used to. There's a little bit of inexperience there in certain areas on that team that might not be able for that pressure, and I think Ireland have to try and capitalise on that.
I know, Tony, that in one of my previous visits to New Zealand, the game in Christchurch was pretty tight. Dan Carter with one of very few drop goals in his entire career to seal the victory. And I know that there was a lot of sympathy, you know, during the course of the week after the match for Ireland. And the game the following week was in Hamilton. I was meeting and bumping into a lot of people during the week who were saying, gosh, geez, Ireland are really good. And I actually wouldn't mind if Ireland won next week. You know, this kind of thing.
Because Ireland don't rub their noses.
And then what happened? We turned around the following week and it was 60 points to nil.
New Zealanders feel that way because, you know, there's a couple of other countries you could mention that would rub our noses in it. But you guys are too busy celebrating your great achievement to worry about putting the Borax in on us. But, you know, it's funny, you know, 3 years ago after that game, we sat in a pub not far from our hotel and we thought, what would it have been like if Ireland had won that game today and how great it would be to be in Dublin. And we said then that we'd love to be there to experience it when it happened. Well, it's happened now. I've experienced it, and thanks
that's
very much.
Good luck.
That was only Chicago. That was only the first bit.
But the fans were great afterwards. Look, very hard to call. I think the All Blacks will be better. I think they'll be a lot better. But I noticed the bookies offering, what, a 16-point head start? This is Irish book. That's very generous.
6-1 on. For the All Blacks, you can still get 6-1 on Ireland to win the game. I mean, that is generous in a two-horse race.
I think so.
I'm assuming that sort of you're using your considerable knowledge that we're going to be split here if I ask you who's going to win this one. But I think the first 20 minutes is going to be absolutely monumental in this match.
Yeah, it is. And I'm loath to predict Ireland winning the game because I predicted the All Blacks winning the last game and Ireland did the job for us. And I don't want to put the kiss and death in it. So I'm not going to call it one way or the other. And it's as simple as that because I won't be held responsible for us not winning that game. I'm going to say, put it out there, that I think New Zealand are stronger. There's no doubt about that. They're a stronger team than we faced in Chicago. That being said, you could argue that we've got a bit of strength back as well in Sean O'Brien and a bit of physicality that maybe I felt we were missing going over to Chicago. We've got good strength on the bench, and I think Joe will pull something out that's a little bit different to what we've seen before as well. So, you know, while I think that favourites tag is undoubtedly New Zealand's, there's every chance that we could get a result here.
Tony, we're looking for the Blacklash, apparently, is coming.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, people assume that, don't they? It's a dangerous thing. Look, one thing the All Blacks can't afford to do is get behind the sort of, both the last two times they've played, they've been well behind. They know now they can't do that because this Ireland team has the ability to close a game out. Look, I think they can come back and square the ledger. But I think they'll have to play very, very well and a heck of a lot better than they played in Chicago. But all I'd say is it's going to be a fantastic occasion and a great stadium in front of a great crowd, and may the best team win.
All right, lads, listen, we're going to leave it there. Reggie Corrigan, thanks indeed for joining me. Tony Johnson, enjoy Saturday and the best of luck and the best year for the rest of your travels. From everybody on the Breakdown team, myself, Michael Corcoran, and producer Andrew O'Connor, thanks indeed for downloading and listening. And don't forget, you can catch all of the action from the Aviva Stadium on RT Radio 1 on Saturday afternoon.